see, I think I have to wait a second while it's loading. But we had an interesting experience when we talked to the staffers for Joe Barton. They warned us that we would be subject to a lot of criticism and a lot of controversy. Of course, we forged ahead with no compunction about such things. And so what I'd like to do is talk about part of our experience in terms of paleoclimate reconstruction and give you a bit of a background in the paleoclimate construction and why there were some problems with the Mann article. Now, the thing that's in the background, the shadow in the background of this first slide, is actually the Mann reconstruction for 1999, or it's essentially a version of it, which purported to show that the temperature in the last decade or so was the hottest in 1,000 years. So let me just go ahead and make some comments. As you know, climate change has gotten a lot of popular press and a lot of movies as well. The outcome of climate change has been highly variable in terms of the movie industry. Of course, The Day After Tomorrow made it very cold. Kevin Costner made it a water planet. And Al Gore made it an Inconvenient Truth. There's been a lot of press on this, some relatively scientific, some in the popular press, and some in the news articles. Now, there's been a lot of naysayers as well. I do not count myself among the naysayers. My attitude going into the congressional testimony was that it does no one any good if the statistics and the science underlying this climate change stuff is not totally scientifically based and really good science. There's too much at stake in terms of cost, both publicly and privately. There's been a lot of naysayers, and I do not count myself among those, but Fred Singer was one of them. You might know that Michael Crichton wrote the book. Patrick McDonald's and Fred Singer again, and Michaels. These are all books that are sort of in the popular press that sort of purport to show that there's no substance to this area. I came across a book the other day called The Deniers, and much to my surprise, I turned out to be chapter two in The Deniers. Al Gore never contacted me. I guess that's true. But it turns out that I demolished the hockey stick graph, which I didn't know I did either. I did actually buy a copy of this book and just to see what they said about me, and more or less they got it right, I think. So part of my theme here is looking backwards and looking forward. So paleoclimate reconstruction uses proxies to estimate temperature profiles from the past. Climate models, on the other hand, use physical and statistical models, usually based on partial differential equations, to understand, predict, and project temperature and other climate variables into the future. So it's my contention that both of these things have a fundamental statistical and stochastic character, and people like Doug Nitschke, who works at NCAR, is a leader in doing the statistical and ensuring the statistical accuracy of this. The problem I see with both of these areas, both paleoclimate reconstruction, is that the proxies get more and more difficult to accumulate as you go backwards in time, and so more and more uncertainty is associated with the estimation of temperature profiles in the past. On the other hand, the statistical or the physical models based on partial differential equations, according to my friends at NCAR, tend to be sensitive dependent on initial conditions. They tend to be chaotic systems, which implies that they're dependent on the initial conditions, and if the initial conditions change slightly, the predictions can change fairly dramatically. Now, one of the things that I think raises skepticism is that in circa 1975, the popular press, as well as some of the scientific press, was arguing that climate change was, we were headed for another ice age. Circa 1990, the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, produced this temperature profile. There was a so-called medieval warm period, going from about 1000 or 1100 AD to approximately 1400, 1450 AD. And beginning around 1450 AD till about 1850, there was a period that was called the Little Ice Age. So given that temperature profile, the current increase in temperature, in the temperature record, beginning about 1850 is about 0.8 degrees centigrade, plus or minus one-tenth of a degree centigrade. And so that's for global average climate, global average temperature. That does not look spectacularly unusual, given that there was this so-called medieval warm period. Now, this is the MAN curve that was produced from 1000 to the current time. One of the things you notice is that the so-called medieval warm period seems to have totally disappeared. The other thing you should notice about this is that in the period from about 1900 to about 2000, the temperature profile is basically centered, and most of the temperature profile in the earlier days is substantially below the nominal zero point. This is relatively important in terms of trying to understand the temperature record. Now, paleoclimate reconstruction is based on a number of different kinds of proxies, geological, glaciological, biological, and historical records written by people who were sailing the oceans. So more specifically, the time domain is important. The tree rings typically have a yearly cycle, and the temporal range of estimation is about 10 of the fourth years into the past. Corals and ice cores have a yearly cycle as well, again about 10 of the fourth years into the past, about 10,000 years in the past. Now, some of these others kind of features cannot be isolated into sort of an annual cycle. So they are not as effective in reconstructing the temperatures. So this particular chart was taken out of Bradley and Eddy and is an actual textbook that purports to discuss paleoclimate reconstruction. Now, I thought it was interesting that they had a column that says potential information derived, and you see these codes TP, CB, V, etc. So T is temperature, P is precipitation, C stands for chemical composition, and of course that can be of atmosphere, R, water. There's information on biomass, volcanic eruptions, and so on. Now, I thought it was interesting that this was these proxies were being promoted as a highly valuable way of telling past temperatures. But from a statistical point of view, these kinds of items are confounding factors. And so we have the potential of when we're trying to do paleoclimate reconstruction, you have a potential confounding factor. So the big three are tree rings, ice cores, and coral. Tree ring size and density variations allow you to do some estimation. The best signal for temperature is when the trees are stressed, either by latitude or altitude. And one of the key elements is that tree rings are not only affected by temperature, but also by precipitation and carbon dioxide fertilization. Ice cores are formed by our paleoclimate proxies because we can tell the ice layer thickness, we can tell how much precipitation there was. We can also tell by the oxygen and hydrogen isotope ratios, and also the carbon dioxide trapped in the ice. Corals are are animals that have an annual growth cycle. They're symbiotic with algae, which provides nutrients for the animal, and the animal provides the calcium carbonate substrate that the algae can live on. So this is an example of a cross-section of a tree, and you can see the high-density regions and the low-density regions and the overall thickness. Much of the paleoclimate reconstruction, or at least one of the key factors, was based on bristlecone pines. These things are trees that live for a very long time, and they're full of pitch and resin, and even when they die, because they have so much resin in them, they do not decay very rapidly. This is a sample of some tree ring size from these bristlecone pines, and you can see that this one has a hockey stick shape, and this one has a hockey stick shape, and this one maybe even an anti-hockey stick shape. But these are typical of the kind of plots you get from these kind. This tree ring reconstruction, and you can see that they are very, very noisy and don't often have a lot of signal. So these were 70 trees from the North American series that were selected in 1400. There's a lot of questions from a statistical perspective about these trees, you know, how representative they are, how well they were sampled from a statistical perspective. Ice cores are used in two ways. Ice cores, we can measure the thickness of the ice, so we know something about the precipitation. We know that the condensation of ice of water depends on the atomic weight of the molecule. And so if there are isotopes of oxygen and hydrogen in the molecule, we get a differential condensation rate. And so we can tell at what temperatures ice was formed by that. We can also tell something about the carbon dioxide content. And so this was Lonnie Thompson's picture that appeared in Al Gore's movie that purported to show that the connection between ice core temperature reconstruction and the carbon dioxide content. The implication in the movie was that these were so highly correlated that obviously carbon dioxide had a big impact. And of course, the top one, the red, is the carbon dioxide going off the scale. And so the implication was that it would soon follow that the temperature would go off the scale. The only trouble with this is that the carbon dioxide followed but not led the time series by about 800 to 1,000 years. So the apparent correlation, while real, does not explain the mechanism. So those are some other things. Here's some stuff on I'm going to try and finish on time. Here's some stuff on corals. As I explained, corals have to do with the depth of water, the warmth of the water. If the water is deep, if the ocean is rising, that causes less light to feed the algae and so on. It also causes the salinity, the acid. Acidicity of the ocean will also affect the calcium carbonate substrate. So there's lots of factors in the ocean that affect how the coral can lead up. There are two principal methods that were used. The so-called climate field reconstruction, CFR, is essentially a principal component-based method. In the geophysical literature, this is often referred to as empirical orthogonal functions. Essentially, a data matrix of time series are formed, the columns being the proxies going back in time. It's calibrated to the actual temperature measurements, which we have temperature records, thermometer-based temperature records between about 1850 onwards. In general, what happens with principal component method is that the first principal component is weighted to the largest variance. It will respond to the largest variance as the first principal component. And so one of the things that happens with the paleoclimate reconstruction using this climate field reconstruction methodology is that if you're decentered, if the time series is decentered, if it's not centered on zero, that will force most of the time series to be below the axis. If you have calibrated to a time period, for example, between 1900 and about 1990, where the temperature was rising, and so that forces the preferential finding of hockey stick shapes. The climate plus scale is just a simple average of proxies, and depending on what the structure is, you can also reconstruct those. Now, I'm not going to go into details of the principal components. This lecture is actually being recorded, and this material will be available. But the basic notion is that when we do principal component analysis, we look at the covariance matrix. If the covariance matrix is not centered properly, so if it's not a true covariance matrix, then when you do the principal component analysis based on the covariance matrix, on the improper covariance matrix, you get a distortion in the principal component. So this is basically the technical discussion. Typically, we do a principal component analysis by looking at a singular value decomposition. And if we go through this, the bottom line is the bottom couple lines here. So if we don't center properly, we get a bias in the estimate of the eigenvalue, so we get a bias in the first principal component. And depending on the size of that bias, we will typically bias it upwards. This is a reconstruction. The original CDF method was applied to the North American tree proxy series. That 70 series that involved the trees like the bristlecone pines. The top series the top principal component is derived from the methodology that Mann proposed. Calibrating to the period 1900 to 1902, I guess, to 1990, and it was decentered. And so there was a preferential picking for the hockey stick shape. The bottom panel is one we re-ran. This is a properly centered on the entire time series, so we subtracted the mean of the entire time series. And essentially, the hockey stick shape disappears. Now, that doesn't mean there's no hockey sticks. There are hockey sticks in some of the trees, but not most of the trees. To illustrate this, we digitized the 1990 temperature curve. So this is a digital representation of the 1990 curve, the medieval warm period, the Little Ice Age. And what we did was we added 69 noise vectors, noise time series, and one digitized version of this curve. The first panel on the upper left is the result you get. The black curve is the result you get if you center it properly at zero. The upper right curve is what happens if you decenter it by an amount 0.3. The variance of the noise was 1, so the standard deviation is 1. So we're 3/10 of a standard deviation off. The bottom left is 0.5, and the bottom right panel is the PC1 with the decentering of 1. So this illustrates that even one single curve in a set of 69 white noises essentially is enough to severely bias the answer. So the decentered methodology is basically incorrect, and we showed that both in the mathematics of our report and also by simulation evidence. The CPS method can be done in a similar way. What we did was we took that curve. We added large-scale white noise to it. We did it 70 times and then average it together. The black dots are the average, and the red curve, the blue curve is the actual 1990 curve, and the red curve is the smooth reconstruction of that 1990 curve. So you can see very, very close. So this alternate method does not really solve the problem either. Now, one reason we believe that this was the case is that the most common proxies were used in a whole series of papers. This is a list of the proxies that were used. The black regions are the proxies that were used. And so you can see that most of these papers that are listed in the top up here were using essentially the same proxies. So this is a curve from Dr. Mann's own website. He removed the bristlecone pines from the North American tree series, and so the red curve is what you get when you use his methodology but removing the bristlecone pines. The blue curve is with the bristlecone pines included. Berger and Kabash reported a variety of ways by doing relatively minor adjustments of the proxies, and you can see that we get curves all over the place. So in essence, from a statistical point of view, there's a lot of variability. One of the things we were asked in Congress was, what about the independence of these things? So one of the things we did was we looked at the social network analysis of these guys. So these are 46 people who do paleoclimate reconstruction. And what we did was we do what is called in social network analysis a block model. So the block model essentially creates clusters, and what's of interest is to see which people function together. Now, Mann is up in the upper left-hand corner, and you can see that there's a large group here. There's additional groups, and so the style of report writing in the paleoclimate literature is to, and in particular Dr. Mann's style, was to work with certain groups fairly intensively. These were cliques in the graph theoretic sense. And so these were 9 people up here, and there's another 4 or 5 here, and so on. These all had slightly different specialties. This clique in the upper left-hand corner consists of Mann, Rutherford, Jones, Osborne, Briefa, Bradley, and Hughes. And so we looked at these papers that were published that all purported to demonstrate the same hockey stick effect. And you can see that it was I've highlighted in red the people that were in that clique. So we have Bradley and Jones, Mann, Bradley, Hughes, Jones, Briefa, Mann, and Jones, Bradley, Hughes, Jones, Mann, and Osborne, and Briefa. So there are a couple of relatively independent guys in here, but most of these people involve this fairly tight clique of people working in methods similar. Now, one of the interesting things when we went to testimony the second time, we testified twice on the 19th and on the 27th of July, 2006, is that Michael Mann testified in the second testimony, and gave a written testimony that his work, his 1998-1999 work, had been independently verified by several additional authors. One of the papers that he purported to be an independent identification was this paper, Rutherford, Mann, Osborne, Bradley, Brefa, Hughes, and Jones, which was exactly this cluster, this clique up here. So there are some skeptics. In addition, by the way, Mann was an editor of the Journal of Climate. So this is the instrumental temperature record. Some of the other interesting kind of statistical questions is the nature of the temperature recording devices. This is, of course, the microclimates have changed a lot. This is Melbourne's so-called historic weather station, which was in place in 1855 and still in place here in down at the bottom in 2007. And of course, it has to be immediately obvious that the microclimate in 2007 was not the same as it was in 1855. One of the other things that's of great interest, so this is this left panel is the observations for January temperature. GCM is global climate model. And one of the things we often find when looking at the climatology literature is that we often see these kind of side-by-side comparisons where there's sort of what I call the squint factor. If you squint hard enough, maybe these things look kind of like each other. But in gross detail, they actually are not very similar. So that's a little bit of background on paleoclimate reconstruction and some of the things that we were thinking with our testimony. Now, this has not made me enormously popular in some circumstances. Fortunately, Doug is still my friend, I think. And so let me finish there.